What's up, guys? This is Jesse from Plant the Spear, back with you for another episode, and I got something a little big picture I want to talk about today. Florida State's offense has been flat out abysmal in 2024, but who's to blame? Is it DJU? Is it the receivers? Is it the offensive line? Is it the whole thing? And that's what we're going to get into today in an episode that I think you guys are going to find really interesting. So before we jump into that, let me just say a few things here. So first off, obviously, as you can see on YouTube, I am by myself today. Michael will be back with us on Friday. So in that Friday show, we are going to do our Cal preview. I mean, look, if you guys want a quick preview now, they're pretty good. We're pretty not good. And Vegas still thinks we're a 2-point favorite for some odd reason. That's probably about all you need to know. But look, with the way this season is going, I wanted to take a big picture look because, you know, talking about this team week to week is getting kind of old, you know, until they show us something. And granted, the defense showed us something last week against Memphis, but the offense continued their stretch of being one of the worst offenses in the entire country. And so I want to go a little bit big picture on something that I think you guys are going to find really, really interesting today. And by the time you're done with this, I think you're at least going to go, he is on to something there. And I do want to mention a couple things here. This one will be a little bit long. It will be a little bit nerdy. You know, this is kind of where we started with this channel. If you've been watching for a long time, you know, we kind of get into some of the finer details here. Maybe we don't put out as much as everyone else, but we really dig in. And I love doing this type of stuff, right? I would love to record 6 episodes a week. But when I do episodes like this, I almost feel like a forensic scientist of college football. And I love this type of stuff. I love digging in. And then you start to see the light bulbs click as you go through. And you're like, wow, I'm really on to something here. And that's what I got for you guys today. This is going to be based on an article that I have on our website, plantthespear.com, right now that you guys can go check out if you want if you want to see the numbers in front of you, read it at your own pace. It is a longer read, I will tell you that, but it's totally worth the read. And this is definitely worth the listen, I promise you guys. And it is called Trouble in the Trenches, Why FSU Struggles Start Up Front. But I also do want to mention real quick that on that Friday show, we are going to talk about the potential ACC settlement talk that has come up. I want to make sure to get Michael's thoughts on that as well. I think there's some path to good stuff there with some things lining up and also some things we need to address. So we will get into that on Friday as well. One other thing I want to talk about before we get into this that I have noticed on social media here lately that is a little bit interesting. When you look at the Juice Cryer postgame interview, the way he kind of stepped up and was a leader there, and the way you see Edwin Joseph the other day running into practice, kind of made a loud comment, if you don't want to be here, go home. You also saw Malik Benson, you know, he's on a 20-foot wide sidewalk and ran right past Patrick Payton, ran right around him with kind of a disgusted look on his face. Now, that's me assuming he was disgusted there. I really do think with this team, you're starting to see a separation of guys who actually care and guys who actually want this to get better, maybe resenting the guys that are just going through the motions and yet still collecting big NIL dollars. And maybe it's not the NIL dollars, but guys that just aren't trying hard. And so I think you are starting to see that. Now, the question with that is, because again, you know, the defense showed some life last week. And you know, anytime in 2024, if you hold someone to 20 points, that should theoretically be about enough to win the game there. The defense is played bad in the first two games, but you know, if the offense showed any sign of life, you should be able to actually win some games here. But I think really you are starting to see some guys who maybe want to fix this thing, who are still working hard to fix this thing. The biggest question that I have right now is, does Mike Norvell see that? And will, you know, there's the old saying that goes, you win the battle, but you lost the war, or you lost the battle, but you won the war. To me, at this point, your season is basically out the window. There's really nothing you can accomplish except for keeping your recruiting class somewhat together, keeping the younger side of this roster together from transferring at the end of the season, and also building some momentum and experience for 2025, right? And so I think Mike Norvell playing guys, and I'm not saying every upperclassman needs to be benched. I'm not saying that. I think there are some that are playing well that still need to play to help give you a chance at some of these games. But there are other positions where you can go youth movement right now until eventually you just should go youth movement all the way around. Now, some of those older guys have earned the right to play. They've been here a long time. They put in the work. But to me, it feels like, for example, with DJU, you continuing to lose with DJU is like trying to win the weekly battle of winning games while also admitting that you're going to lose the war of trying to salvage your culture of trying to build for 2025, because seeing these guys, kind of gives me a feeling that there might be something you can salvage here, even in a terrible season, but you have to stop trying to win the war or the battle and start focusing on winning the war. You're going to take some losses the rest of the season. You've already lost three of them, and you still got some games that there's no way in heck you're going to win. But I think I hope this coaching staff can see that, and I hope that they can be not too stubborn to pull the trigger there, right? And so I think that you see these guys who are good culture guys, who are good program guys, and again, Malik Benson, this is his last year here, but if he's trying, keep him on the field, you got to focus on the larger term picture here. But that's something that just has been on my mind the last few days that I don't want to touch on here. But again, like I said, that Friday episode, we're going to get into more of this stuff. But this is an opportunity for that I wanted to be, that it's just one-on-one for us, that I wanted to go over this piece that I did. And I put a lot of research into this, like hours upon hours. That's one of the reasons we don't put the most content out, because I do a lot of research on most everything I do. So I hope you guys really enjoy this. And I didn't want to focus on too much besides this, so it doesn't run you too long. So with that being said, you know, I hope you guys enjoy this. I will, well, maybe won't enjoy this because it's going to expose some of our problems, but I hope this at least makes you think by the time it's done. And I appreciate you guys following along, and I will, you know, we'll go slow. We'll make sure that it makes sense here as we go along. Cause like I said, there are some numbers, there are some things to follow here. And before we jump into that, look, Florida State might not look good in 2024, that doesn't mean you don't have to, and you can go to Alumni Hall FSU and get some awesome FSU gear for a great price by using code SPEAR to save 10% on your entire purchase. So make sure you head over and check those guys out at 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee or online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and don't forget to use code SPEAR to save 10%. So let's jump into this part here. Here's the thing about Florida State, right? We know as Florida State fans, we've had offensive line problems for a long time. This year, we got quarterback problems. We got receiver problems. We got effort problems. We got execution problems. We got alignment and assignment problems. We got a lot of problems with this 2024 team. I mean, you look at, we can't catch a wide open screen pass that hits Kazai Holmes in the hands. We can't block on a screen play where Ja'Kai Douglas basically invites Jaylen Brown to get hit and thrown to the ground and almost maybe even get a concussion. Like this, there are problems. I know this is the defense, and we're talking about offense today. Marvin Jones Jr. is one of the most loafing. I don't get it. Like, I don't know why he's still on the field or starting over Sione. But those are problems in itself in 2024. But when we start looking at this offense, because like we said, though, the defense did show some life in that Memphis game. When we look at this offense, which right now is one of the worst offenses in the entire country, where do we throw the blame? Who is at fault here? And I think the popular and the fastest thing that everybody does is just say, man, it's DJU. It's his fault. Throw it at his feet. He's to blame. And look, this episode and that article that I wrote is not made to defend DJ. I'm not doing that. But in the same breath, I have always been one to say that I don't think he's the only problem with this offense that's making this offense bad. He is part of the problem. And he does deserve some of the blame. I will give you that. But like when you look at this offense and you look at in the Power Five with teams that have had at least 50 dropbacks so far in the pass game, we have the highest drop pass percentage. Now, again, that may be some off-target passes. That may be some touch issues from DJU. The problem still remains. Drop passes have been a problem for this team for more than 2024. They were a problem in 2023, and they cost us the NC State game in 2022. Drop passes have still plagued this team. We've also, among the same metrics there, have allowed the second most pressure in college or in Power Four. So you have a quarterback who is facing the second most pressures and has the most drop passes. I don't care if you put Brock Glenn, Jordan Travis, Jameis Winston back there. That's going to make life hard for any quarterback. Now, again, when you look at DJ and you look at the offensive line, which is what we're focusing on today, no, I mean, they are not helped by a guy who is a stick in the mud. He is slow. He has very little pocket presence, very little sack avoidance skills. He doesn't read plays very fast. He checks into the wrong run plays a lot. You know, there are so many things that he does that does not help this offense. But that's kind of the point of what I want to talk about today. So, like, while he is to blame on a lot of these things, The problem to me is the root of the issue is up front, is the offensive line. That is where a lot of this stems from. And, you know, if you think about this like a tree, right, this is a great example. If you think about Florida State, this offense like a tree. So if you consider the offensive line, the roots of the tree, your trenches, the roots down there, but then you consider the skill positions, your branches. And so if you look at, you can have a dead branch here or a dead branch there, as long as your roots are healthy, that tree can still be fruitful. Like say you have a good offensive line, a good quarterback, not great wide receivers, like we had kind of in 2022, where you didn't really have a dynamic guy at wide receiver. Of course you had Johnny Wilson, who's a good one there. But you also, he had a lot of drop problems in too, but you know, you were able to overcome those things. And then eventually you get rid of a branch and the tree just keeps growing. If you have a bad quarterback, but you have great receivers and you have great offensive line play, you can kind of overcome that. That's how a team like Alabama wins a national championship with, you know, with a guy like Greg McElroy or a guy like Mac Jones, or Georgia wins back-to-back national titles with a walk-on, a former walk-on at quarterback. That's how those things happen, because your roots are still healthy. The problem is, once the roots get poisoned, once those roots start to decay and that tree starts to die, you know, you can still have some fruitful branches there. You can still look at that tree and never know the roots are poisoned. You can, wow, this tree's still growing fruit. That's great. But the problem is, this is where Florida State is at, right? The roots have been decaying on this tree for a really, really long time. You've seen it in some years, right? You've seen it in some years, but there's also been years where the branches that were so fruitful, you just didn't know that the tree was sick in the root system, right? You've had great skill players. You've had Dalvin Cook over the years. You've had Jordan Travis over the years. You've had Keon and Johnny and Trey Benson and all this NFL talent that has helped hide bad offensive line play. And so that is what I want to get into today. Now, we know last year and this year that the offensive line has had some issues with guys being injured, but at the same time, I only give them so much leeway for that, right? When you look back to last year, you know, you've had a couple of 4 years to build this up. This year we heard this was the deepest offensive line that Mike Norvell and the best offensive line that they've had at Florida State. You know, yeah, Darius Washington missed that game, you know, against Memphis, but he got mauled against Boston College. So, like, you know, how much does that even really hurt you? And then, of course, Jeremiah Byers has been out for two games in a row. And I'm sure getting these guys back is going to help. Getting Alex Atkins, who has been on a three-game suspension, back is going to help. But how much? And if this is the most depth that you've had up front in 5 years, where is it at? Why are you still having to play a struggling Robert Scott? You know, why don't you have guys when they're struggling on the field? You don't have anyone to replace them. You have guys who still can't get on the field. And so that is one of my biggest concerns. And again, to touch on the Alex Atkins situation, it's never good to have your offensive line coach, your primary offensive line coach, and your offensive coordinator not on the sideline on Saturday. So I do think that's going to be a net positive, right? But at the same time, he's allowed to coach 6 days a week, just not on game days. And so I think you will see an improvement. I don't know that you're just going to see some, you know, light switch flip type of thing where all of a sudden we're running for 200 yards and the offense is scoring 40 points a game. I just don't think that's going to happen. I do think when you talk about DJU, I think he needs to get help from guys around him. But I've also been one of the ones that is calling for a change, right, at quarterback. I think they should go with Brock or Luke. I think Brock, because he already has a year in the system, and I'm frankly scared to put Luke, who is probably the future at the quarterback position, behind this offensive line. I think just his mobility would help hide some of the things on this offensive line. And frankly, if I was Mike Norvell, I know he doesn't coach based on what the fans want. If I were him, I would put Brock in. Because look, if it goes good, good. You fix the offense. If it goes bad, then you can at least tell the fans to shut the heck up and let me coach, because it didn't work. So I don't understand why they haven't changed yet. I think that, again, judging based on the depth chart, and there is no reason for Mike Norvell to tip his hand at a quarterback change for Cal. DJU is still listed as a starter. So we're going to see, does Brock Glenn finally get some packages, some looks? If DJ struggles, does he make the change based on Mike Norvell's rhetoric? I don't know that's going to be the case. So I think they should change quarterbacks. But what I'm saying is there's a lot of things that aren't helping DJU, and that's what we're going to get into right now. And so I think we know, as Florida State fans, you have had issues up front on the offensive line for the better part of a decade. You know, the last decent offensive line that we had, probably 2014. We've had issues ever since then. And I think, based on the example, like we said, with the tree, I think this is where in 2024, you don't have enough playmakers, dynamic playmakers, fruitful branches to now hide the root decay anymore. You just don't. You don't have the Dalvin Cook. You don't have the Jordan Travis. You know, your offense is just a complete failure in every position almost. And it also is killing your defense because, right, because they can't even, we're talking about worried about getting touchdowns. We can't get first downs. So even when the defense does show fight, like in the Memphis game, they're gassed in the second half because the offense can't stay on the field to leave, get them off the field. And so that's the problem with this offensive line this year is they've been covered up for so long that now in 2024, you don't have that type of dynamic playmaker to cover them up. So everything is being exposed. All the warts are being exposed now. And that is the main problem I feel like is with this offense and has been for some time. So let's get into it. So being that we have seen, you know, the signs really started to come back in 2023. Now, we thought the offensive line, it was bad in 2021, 2020. 2022 was probably the best year they've had since 2014 from a run blocking standpoint, which opens up a lot of things in the rest of the offense. But in 2023, you saw the signs start to show up, and we're going to get into all those. And in 2024, it's fallen off a cliff completely. You know, and again, I do want to point out that, like, yes, the offensive line is up against a numbers game when you have teams that are stacking the box with 6 to 8 guys. That's a problem. That makes life hard for them. But you also have to throw the ball to back that defense off. So if you're not pass blocking effectively, you're not helping the pass game open up the run. Now, there's more than just the offensive line. DJ misses reads. You know, he doesn't see a lot of these high-low routes. He's looking at one guy. He misses one guy. We don't catch the passes that he throws at guys. That's the problem, too. So he is a big part to blame with that. But again, like I said, man, you have to give him time. You know, you look at the pass that he completed to Malik Benson. You need to throw more of those to open to back that defense off. It worked great. But you also look at the one where he got picked when he was aiming for Kyle Morlock. Granted, he's got to have better pocket awareness. I get that. But he had already sidestepped the pressure one time. And then as he's looking downfield, now he had 3 to 4 seconds. You got to get rid of the ball faster, man. You just got to. But as he threw that ball, his arm got hit and it changed the trajectory of the throw and ended up being a pick. So as much as you can say that's on DJU, that's as much as it is on the offensive line. That's what I'm trying to get at here. DJU's not perfect. He takes a lot of ownership in the problem, but it's hard to drop back and pass when you don't have time to drop back and pass. And so let's get into this because there has been a lot of clamor on social media about FSU needs to recruit mobile quarterbacks. That's the answer to this. And yes, that is putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, right? That is going to help hide the problem. But to me, it's more about fixing the root of the problem, which is the offensive line that has plagued you for the better part of 10 years, rather than recruiting a mobile quarterback just to cover it up again. Now, granted, let's talk about why. Now, Mike Norvell has had success with mobile quarterbacks. So I'm not saying you shouldn't get a mobile quarterback. And I do want to mention in today's modern college football, when we talk about mobile quarterbacks, I'm not talking about Lamar Jackson versus Tom Brady, right? I'm talking about you don't need necessarily Jordan Travis or Lamar Jackson, but you can't be what DJU is in 2024. A mobile quarterback is a luxury, but not a necessity. But a statue or a guy who can't run like DJU it's a detriment to your offense. And we thought he'd be able to run better than this based on what he did at Clemson and Oregon State. I don't know if it's an injury because, you know, he wears the brace. He's got the sleeve on in practice and games. I don't know if it's an injury that's causing that. But Mike Norvell has had success with mobile quarterbacks in the past. And I am going to be referencing this article throughout the show. So that's what I'll be kind of looking at over here. But when you look back to his time at Arizona State, he had Taylor Kelly, who was a guy that was a dual threat guy who ran the ball for over 300 yards, close to 500 yards in a few seasons there. And then, of course, Jordan Travis at Florida State. Now, in 5 out of the 6 seasons that he's had a mobile quarterback, they've had a top 20 scoring offense, 2020 being the one year that they did not. So he's had success with a mobile quarterback. So his offense can work with a mobile quarterback, but that's not exactly what it's predicated on having to run at peak efficiency. And Memphis is what tells us that. So when you look at Memphis, throughout Norvell's time there, in 4 years, he had only one quarterback finished with positive rushing yards in any one of those seasons. And that was only at plus 22 yards. So they never had a guy who was a mobile guy. But they had a top 10 scoring offense in 3 out of 4 years and top 15 in 4 out of 4 years. So they have had plenty of good offenses without having a mobile quarterback. And why is that? Well, it all starts up front. Their offensive line has been good. And we're going to talk about that more in a second. And also do keep in mind, Mike Norvell did try to bring his offensive line coach, Ryan Silverfield, who is the head coach of the team that just beat you in Doak Campbell Stadium. He tried to bring him with him, but of course he obviously stayed behind to be Memphis's head coach, and you can't really blame him for that. So when we talk about the offensive line here, this is where I want to get at with it's not helping the quarterback. Okay, obviously I'm going to tell you guys something that you all know. This isn't breaking news. Quarterbacks play better in a clean pocket, right? That's common sense knowledge for every football fan at every level. So while we throw a lot of the blame at DJU, let's talk about pressured passing. We're going to get into some pressured passing, some pass block efficiency, some run blocking. That's how we're going to flow through this. And we're going to do some comparisons as well. So when we talk about the pressured passing, which is how many times, what percentage of your dropbacks in pass plays that you face pressure from the defense. Again, reminding you that quarterbacks struggle under pressure and do better. You know, we know that. So when we look at Norvell's offensive lines, his quarterbacks at Memphis, let's talk about some numbers here. So in 2016, this was the highest pressure rate that Memphis had under Mike Norvell at 32.7%. In 2017, that number dropped to 25.7%. In 2018, it dropped again to 23.9%. And in the 2018, it was 23.9%. 2019, it rose a little bit to 25.4, but what you can see, the takeaway there is it was only over 30% one time in 4 years, and they kind of lived in that mid-20% range, which is pretty good. And so the two teams that I want to bring in for comparison here with Florida State and Memphis is Georgia, one, because Georgia has been the standard in college football over the last 3 to 5 years. The other team is going to be Clemson, because although we did win the ACC last year, they won, 7 out of the last 9 ACC championships, probably going to make the ACC championship again this year, probably not going to win it, but they might make it. So they have been a standard in the ACC where Florida State is trying to get back to. So we're going to use those two teams as the example. And I do want to tell you that the numbers I'm using here are from PFF, Pro Football Focus, and the data reliably runs back to 2014, which I think is a kind of a really convenient number for us. That's 10 years. That is the last time Florida State was really successful compared to now when they had, well, not now, but 2023. And it also covers Clemson's good run and Georgia's good run. So just keep in mind, that's why we're sticking with 2014 data and before and after, because I want to, you know, have the most accurate data for this. Okay, so remember what we just talked about. At Memphis, their offensive lines, their quarterbacks faced an average of pressure rate of mid-20s, only over the 30 mark one time in 4 years. When you look at Georgia, over a starting Georgia quarterback, now I'm not going to like guys who play in garbage time. This is the primary starter for these teams. The primary starting quarterback at UGA has not faced a pressure rate over 30% in the past 10 years. In the past 10 years, keep that number in your mind because it's gonna make a lot of sense in just a second. In 3 of their past 5 seasons, keep in mind 2 of those were national title seasons, they were at a pressure rate of less than 20%. So under 20% in 3 of the last 5, never over 30 in the last 10. When we talk about Clemson, when you look at what they've done over the past 10 years, only 2 times in the past 10 seasons has a Clemson starting quarterback faced a pressure rate over 30%, only twice in 10 years. Those 2 seasons were 2021, which was a bad year for them, one of their worst in the last decade, and 2023, which was the other one, the bad year in the last decade. Those were the years they didn't win the ACC title. Those were the years that their offense struggled. That one of those was DJU. But you see what I'm getting at here. It's by no coincidence that the years they struggled were the years they faced the highest amount of pressure. So now let's talk about what that means for Florida State when comparatively speaking, because we also have to remember that Florida State has had a mobile quarterback to help them out the last 4 years to avoid pressure with Jordan Travis. Now, again, keep in mind, this is not me placing an indictment on Alex Atkins and the job that he's doing. I'm just giving you the numbers and letting you make that decision yourself, because the numbers are what they are. And there were three offensive line coaches here before him that didn't do much of a better job. They didn't fix this either. This is something that's plagued Florida State for a long time. But getting on to the numbers here, these are the pressure rates that Jordan Travis faced from 2020 to 2023. And DJU has faced so far in 2024. Again, remember, no Georgia quarterback in the last 10 years has faced over 30%, and they've been under 20% in three of the last five. And Clemson has only had two times over 30% in 10 years. In 2020, Jordan Travis's pressure rate was 40.2%. 40% of his dropbacks were pressured. 2021, 39.9, another year right at 40%. 2022 got a little better. That was a good year. You had the run game going. 31.2%, still above 30%. 2023, the best season you've had in the last decade at 27.7%. But there's some things we got to talk about with 2023. 2024, this year so far, is the highest that it's been, is 40.9%. That is atrocious. It is just bad. DJU is pressured on a lot. He is pressured a lot. Second most pressures in Power Four. Now, again, not all of that is his fault, and we're going to talk about that again. Now, to look at the quarterbacks that did play, because, you know, Jordan Travis wasn't the starter all the time. To look at the quarterbacks that Jordan Travis, not named Jordan Travis, since 2020 that played at least 35 dropbacks. Like, I'm not counting A.J. Duffy, who played like 6 or 8 dropbacks. There's no point in counting that, because those numbers can be skewed. But of quarterbacks not named Jordan Travis, who had at least 35 dropbacks, so a decent workload to judge from 2020 to 2023, faced an average pressure rate of 39.8%. That's Chuba. That's James Blackman. That's Mackenzie Milton. That is Tate Rodemaker. That is Brock Glenn. Those guys faced an average of 40% as well. And so there's a couple things that I want to address here, right? And the first off is with that 2023 offensive line, they were pretty respectable at pass blocking. It was really the run game where they struggled. And we're going to talk about that in the next portion of this. But they were decent at pass blocking. But they also got some help, right? And so when you look at the pressure numbers that Jordan Travis faced at 27.7% in 2023, there's a couple of things that helped them out. And the first of that was Jordan Travis becoming a more efficient quarterback. You know, Jordan Travis was always a very efficient quarterback. He would get rid of the ball, had high touchdown, low interception percentage. He ran when he needed to. He could help evade pressure. And so that was a product of him being just a really good quarterback. And then the second was play calling, and we're going to talk about that in 1 second. But let's first talk about Jordan Travis. So PFF also has a stat where it talks about pressure ownership, quarterback versus offensive line, because obviously, you know, the offensive line is ultimately responsible for letting the guys in the backfield, but the quarterback can share in some of these pressures too by holding the ball too long, taking too long to make reads, things like that. So you can have shared responsibility of pressures here. You know, if you just stand back there and pat the ball, you're going to get pressured. It's going to happen eventually. These guys can only block for so long. But you can also still have just a bad offensive line with a guy who gets the ball out quick who gets pressured a lot. So let's talk about some pressure numbers here. We're going to give numbers for the responsibility from Jordan Travis versus the offensive line. And these may not add up to 100% because you have shared responsibility and it's the number, you know, the percentage of your dropbacks, right? So it's not always going to equal 100% here. In 2020, Jordan was responsible for 23.6% of the pressures on the quarterback. The offensive line was at 67.3%. In 2021, that number dropped to 19.8%, and the offensive line jumped up to 77.8%. In 2022, that number for Jordan Travis climbed a little bit, 22.4%. The offensive line was responsible for 78.6%, so it's getting worse and worse every year. But the pressure rate was coming down. So it was more, it was getting better, but the offensive line was becoming more and more responsible for the pressures. In 2023, Jordan had his best season yet from this standpoint. 14.3% of pressures were on him. The offensive line peaked in 2023 at 80%. And so that's not great, right? The other thing that helped with that, well, let's look at the other quarterbacks too. Now, because we know Jordan went down with injury in 2023. So how much of this did Jordan cover up? Because Jordan covered up a lot of these problems. And so when you go here and you look at what Jordan did, or after Jordan went down, you have Tate, Rotemaker, and Brock Glenn that stepped in. Now, Tate faced pressure on 34.5% of the dropbacks against Florida. But do keep in mind, he had a really high responsibility rate at 31.6%. So a lot of the pressures fell on Tate. Also keep in mind that Florida was 101st in sacks that year. So they were not a great team at getting pressure to begin with. Now, when you look at Brock Glenn in the ACC title game, first off, I'm glad that kid survived that game because the offensive line was terrible in that game, and they gave up a lot of big shots on Brock. He faced pressure. Now, Louisville was a team that was very good at getting pressure last year. He faced pressure on a whopping 53.6% of his dropbacks. Over half of the times he dropped back to pass, he was pressured. That's hard on a true freshman, especially when you got receivers that are dropping passes left and right, because I think his drop pass percentage was like 20% in that game. Actually, when you look back to 2023, Brock Glenn was like number one or number two in drop pass percentage of quarterbacks. So again, drop passes aren't helping these guys. But the offensive line, like we said, they really struggled in that game. And then you look at the bowl game. You know, that was a 53.6% without Jordan. When you look at the bowl game, I understand Florida State was severely undermanned against Georgia. The one place where they had their starters was on the offensive line. They had almost every starter in, if not every starter in that game. Now, on against Georgia, Brock's pressured percentage was 41.4%. So better than Louisville, but also still above 40%. And Brock also had a much lower ownership of the percentages, pressure percentages at just 16.7%. So he's better. He was much better at getting rid of the ball because he's a mobile guy in the pocket than Tate was. You know, and he's pretty close to where Jordan was at for most of his career. That's why a mobile guy kind of helps this. You have quick passes and you have a mobile guy who helps you evade pressure and you get the ball out of his hands quickly when you have a struggling offensive line. But the point in that was, while Jordan had a career low pressure rate of 27.7% in 2023, when Jordan was not at quarterback, the pressure rate jumped up to 43.2%. So that offensive line was hidden by Jordan's ability to get the ball out, one, and also to evade pressure. Now, the other thing that helped them was play calling. Here's the thing. So Mike Norvell has been a head coach now for nine. This is his ninth year. And if we go back to even the 2 years of data I can get on Arizona State, that puts us at 11 years, going back to 2 years of the OC at ASU. So Mike Norvell has only had a screen percentage above 20%, that screen passes, only thrown screen percentage or screen passes over 20% of the time, 1 year in the last 11 years. You want to guess what year that was? You got it, 2023 at 22.3%. So he knew that offensive line wasn't good. That's why we saw him, in hindsight, he abandoned the run a lot that season. You know, in Clemson, they only ran the ball against Clemson. They only ran the ball 20 times that game. That is a career low for him as an offensive coordinator or a head coach because he knew he couldn't run the ball. So he had to throw it. That's why he did that. And sometimes it made us mad, but now we see why. But he also threw a ton of screen passes to help hide the deficiencies on that offensive line. I mean, you remember, you know, you had Byers just getting, you had guys getting whipped by three-man defensive fronts. So he had to do things to help them out. Now, you got to catch the screen passes, but that's something they probably need to do a little bit more this year because DJU's screen percentage so far is only at 15.4%. You got to find a way to help these guys out. You got to catch it when they throw it to you. But with that being said, you might be sitting here thinking like, well, DJ's slow in the pocket. His pocket presence isn't great. You know, he steps into sacks more than he steps away from them. So his pressure ownership percentage has to be through the roof. Wrong. At least according to PFF. So far in 2024, DJ is credited with being responsible for only 13.5% of the pressures, which is actually the lowest percentage of any FSU quarterback since 2020. Yet, he's faced a higher pressure percentage than Jordan Travis did in any year from 2020 to 2023 as a starter. Also, keep in mind, he hasn't faced the best defenses on the schedule yet. What do you think is going to happen when we face Miami's defensive line or Clemson's defensive line or Notre Dame's defensive line? They're going to eat this offensive line for lunch. And the thing is, like, yeah, you can credit a little bit to this to DJ, but you just look at the offensive line. I mean, Darius Washington got ate alive by that BC defensive end. You got guys who, when they try to pull, they're still trying to run counter. They can't do it successfully because the pullers are running into each other. They're pulling the wrong way and running into each other. They're not getting at the right depth. They're not climbing to the second level. This offensive line is dysfunctional. You've just had guys that have been able to hide it for a really long time. And so, yes, DJ is responsible for some of these because he is slow at making reads. He doesn't get rid of the ball very fast. I think he was actually down like in the hundreds in time to throw, how long it took him to throw. So he's got to get the ball out faster. And maybe I think one of the answers here, besides like a little bit more screen game, is taking some of those deep shots like you saw with Malik Benson to be able to back this defense off. But, you know, maybe you just need to give him a one read offense. Like, look, dude, this is you got one read. You either hike it, throw it, and get rid of it, or you take off running. Whatever it is, you have to go to kind of a very fast pace, almost like a two-minute offense, so you can't have time for things to blow up in the backfield like they have been. I think that could be another way to help this offense in 2024. But again, also when you look at DJU has been sacked 6 times in the past 2 games. While he does move slow in the pocket, again, numbers are great. We watch the film. We see what's going on here, but you still got to talk with the numbers too. So we've seen the film. We know that he has a problem in the pocket. His pressure to sack percentage is only how many times a pressure turns into a sack is only 14.9%, which is less than 1% higher than the much more elusive Jordan Travis at 14.1% in 2023. And that percentage is also lower than Tate or Brock was last season. So again, you just have to imagine that, like, even if you get those other guys in, they're going to have the defense in their lap in a heartbeat. Now, you can move the pocket with those guys a little bit faster, and maybe you can even do that with DJ. You got to get him out of the pocket. You got to get him running. You got to get him moving. And I know he's slow, and I know the other guys would be better at that. That's why they should make a change. But I guess what I'm trying to say here is that the offensive line is killing DJ, and DJ's not helping them at all either. And then when you do make a good throw, the receivers drop it. So it's just, you've got so many small dysfunctional, well, not small, but so many dysfunctional aspects that are snowballing into one terrible product. And so let's go to the pass blocking efficiency portion now. And what this is basically is PFF has a stat where they look at your dropbacks, your pressures, your hurries, your sacks, and all that stuff, and they combine them into an efficiency grade, and then they rank them. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at where Florida State stands against the Power Five. And so the years that we're doing this, there were 69 teams that we compared them to in the rankings, 1 through 69. So Florida State, under this current staff, in 2020, they were 58th of 69 teams. It's not great. 2021, 58th of 69 teams. Not great. 2022, 50th. Again, not great, but you were able to run the ball well, so you were able to hide that. In 2023, it was tied for 21st. So much better, but again, like we talked about, they were pretty decent at pass blocking. Wait till we get to the run blocking numbers. That's where the problem lies with that 2023 offensive line. And again, also keep in mind, you had Jordan was efficient quarterback, and you also had the screen game that was helping them out. So far in 2024, yuck, 63rd of 69 teams. We already know Florida State's one of the worst rushing teams in all of Power Four, in all of FBS, really. You're also one of the worst pass blocking teams in the country, too. So this offensive line is killing you. Now, in case you were wondering, obviously Memphis is not a Power Five team. But how did they have all this success without a mobile quarterback, without a guy who can run from pressure? Well, if I were to take that Memphis team and plug them into the Power Five rankings, just so we kind of have a similar base as we're working with Florida State's rankings here, in 2016, Memphis would have been, and I know they're not a Power Five team, but they weren't facing Power Five competition, but they don't have Power Five talent either. 2016, they would have been tied for 41st. That was the one year they allowed over 30% pressure rate, so not good, but not as bad as Florida State has been. In 2017, Memphis would have been 10th in pass blocking efficiency. In 2018, they would have been 11th in pass blocking efficiency. In 2019, they would have been tied for 33rd. So leaps and bounds better than where Florida State was at. Now, Let's circle back real quick to where I said this is not an indictment on Alex Atkins, because these offensive line issues have plagued Florida State for a really long time. And so we're going to look back to a comparison here for some deeper rooted things here. When you talk about, again, remember the Georgia and the Clemson example that we talked about with the pressure rates, right? So a Georgia starting quarterback, again, has not faced a pressure rate over 30% in the last 10 years. Clemson has only faced a pressure rate over 30% twice in the past 2 years. Over that same span, Florida State quarterbacks have only faced a pressure rate under 30% twice in 10 years. You are the exact opposite of these two teams that have had a lot more success than you. And in one of those years, it was 29.1, so right at the doorstep of 30. And that was in 2014. And then at 27.7 in 2023, which is what we talked about. And keep in mind, what was 2014 and 2023? That was the best two seasons you've had in the past decade. So I hope this is starting to make a good picture for you, because you can see the causation and the correlation of how this has happened. The causation to your problems is the offensive line. The correlation to success is when they are good. And that also goes for Georgia and Clemson, which we're going to get into in a minute. So again, keep in mind here that the 2 years that you've been good have been your best years. So let's look at a little bit farther back history of Florida State and why this has been a problem that has plagued this team for a long time. So in 2014, Florida State's offensive line and pass block efficiency ranked 33rd. So that was decent. Not great, but decent. In 2015, it dropped to 52nd. In 2016, it was 49th. In 2017, it was tied for 60th. In 2018, you were 68th out of 69 teams. You were bottom of the barrel bad. In 2019, you were 65th. So again, when Alex Atkins took over, this was a dumpster fire of an offensive line. And we all know that. We watched it on TV every Saturday. So let's also talk about those two teams that we compared to. Florida, or Georgia and Clemson, over the last 10 years, four national titles combined by those two teams in the past 10 years. Now, let's look at what their offensive line efficiency ratings were in just their title years to show you we know where we're at. Let's look at where we need to be, because this is four national championships right here. And one thing to point out with these two teams is that in only one of these four seasons, did they have a quarterback, Deshaun Watson at Clemson? Did they have a quarterback run for more than 260 yards? So they had guys that could move, but they didn't have Lamar Jackson back there helping them out. They didn't have Jordan Travis back there helping them out. So in 2016, Clemson, in their first national title season, was 15th in pass block efficiency. 2018, Clemson was 4th in pass block efficiency. And keep in mind, that was the Trevor Lawrence year, so he was less mobile than Deshaun Watson. In 2021, Georgia was at 7th, and in 2022, they were at 2nd. I mean, the numbers tell you right there where you need to be successful. And to go one step further, when you look at Clemson's six-year run of making the playoffs every year for 6 years consecutively, their offensive line efficiency ranking was top 15 every single year. Now, Georgia has made the playoffs 3 years since its inception. In two of those 3 years, they won a national title. Those 2 years also happened to coincide with the 2 years they finished top 10 in pass block efficiency. The third year that they didn't win, they finished outside of the top 10. I believe it was like somewhere around 34th. I don't have the number right in front of me right now. So again, you see the correlation to success, not just at Florida State. That's what happens at Clemson and at Georgia and these programs that we want to be. Florida State has only finished top 50 in pass block efficiency twice or three times in the past decade. And one of those was 49th. And so again, it's just not that been that good. And so as we close out the pass blocking aspect, what this shows us is two main things, right? First, if you want to be elite, you need elite play in the trenches. It just has to happen. And of course, you can talk about that on the defensive side of things too. That's a whole nother conversation. We talked about that in the Tough Questions episode. You know, again, that's where you see like where TCU got exposed in that national championship against Georgia. You know, their offensive line was kind of good throughout the year. That guy ran for a lot of yards, their quarterback. But when you faced a defensive line like Georgia, you know, you had the one where I think it was like Jalen Carter that broke through the offensive line and was carrying the quarterback around in the backfield like a baby. Like, I mean, that's where you get exposed, because the elite teams are separated from the not elite teams by having elite trench play. And so Florida State, and this is, again, this is where the correlation to FSU's success is directly tied to its offensive line play. Now, there are, of course, other aspects to this too, quarterback play, defense, all that things. But while this team has struggled for a long time, the only 2 years in the past decade that a Florida State quarterback faced a pressure rate under 30% and the offensive line finished in the top 35 even of pass block efficiency were the only two seasons in those last 10 years where they won the ACC title and they did not lose more than one game in a season, and that is 2014 and 2023. So I'm sure you're probably now going, I see what you mean. That makes a lot of sense. Like, you see where you got to be to get there. And I think the thing is, like, when you look, and we're going to transition into run blocking, but one of the things that I want to touch on here is, like, Florida State has been really good at having talented skill positions with the Jameis Winstons, with the Jordan Travises, with the Dalvin Cooks, with even the Tamorion Terry at receiver and things like these, and Johnny and Keon. The skill positions have covered up the offensive line for a really long time. We are built backwards from like a Georgia, a Clemson, or an Alabama even. That's why you see those teams are able to go win national championships with Mac Jones and Greg McElroy and Stetson Bennett and some of these other guys. That's why DJU is able to lead Clemson. I know he got benched in the ACC title game, but he got them to an ACC championship at Clemson because he was surrounded by a lot of talented pieces. The thing is, if you recruit well and you stack your trenches in your offensive line, you can sustain maybe okay quarterback play or a down year in the skill positions. Florida State's been the opposite, right? We have not been, the trenches have been dominant, so everything else kind of falls in place. We've been, everything else has kind of been good. The offensive line just gets us by. And so that's why we have a harder time sustaining success rather than those other programs where every year it's an NFL offensive line. And so it doesn't really matter who you have at quarterback. And again, like I said, there's more factors that play into that. But that is a big part of why Florida State has trouble sustaining success, because they are built backwards. They are not a pipeline of dominant players in the trenches. Now, let's talk about the run blocking, because obviously that is 50% of having a successful offense. That is a big part of this. So let's move over to that side of the ball. And we'll try and speed this up just a little bit here, because Florida State's run game in 2024 has been flat out embarrassing, right? They currently rank 133rd of 134 teams in rushing offense. That's ridiculous, especially for like Mike Norvell, who's had really good rushing offenses in the past. The thing is, it's been terrible this year. But the signs, the cracks in the foundation of offensive line troubles started to show up in 2023. So let's look at what we just talked about with Mike Norvell having a good history of rushing offenses. From his time at Memphis and a yards per game standpoint, in 2016, they ran for 159 on average. In 2017, that was 197, very good. 2018 was unreal, 280 yards per game on average on the ground, unreal. They had 2,000-yard rushers. 2019, they averaged 187 yards on the ground, so that's really good. So when you look at what they've done at Florida State, now you had 2020 was 200 yards per game on average. Now keep in mind, you had Jordan Travis back there. We ran the ball a lot. That's pretty much all we could do. We also didn't play Clemson that year. We didn't play Florida that year. So you had some help making that offensive line look good with that mobile quarterback. In 2021, that number dropped to 178. But in 2022, it rebounded at 214 yards per game. So this is where 2022 is probably the best year for this offensive line that we've had since 2014. And so that's where you're like, okay, maybe we're coming out of the dark ages of offensive line troubles here. We're running 200 yards in 8 consecutive games. That's amazing. That's great. But then in 2023, that number really fell down to 150 yards per game. And the thing is, that average 150 yards per game is the lowest that Mike Norvell has had during his time as an offensive coordinator or head coach. Worst he's had in his career. So you could see, again, like we talked about earlier, you could see why they passed the ball a lot. You could see why they went screen heavy. You could see why they abandoned the run in the Clemson game, because you could see that offensive line really struggled to run block. And so that was definitely a problem. Now, this is the area that we're going to talk about next that is really eye-opening, right? This is really a oh crap type of moment when you hear this. And that's talking about games where Florida State has been held under 100 yards rushing. Now, here's the thing. Like, you're going to face some really good teams sometimes. You're going to face, you know, some Clemsons that have a really good offensive line, the Georgias and things like that. You're going to get held under 100 yards on occasion. It happens. The problem is when it starts to happen repeatedly. The problem is when you can't compensate through a successful pass game or a dominant defense, which is what we're seeing with Florida State in 2024. And so let's look at this here. So while at Memphis, Mike Norvell's offenses were held to under 100 yards rushing just 6 times in 4 years. That's 53 games, excluding the 2019 bowl game when he was no longer the coach. 6 times in 53 games. Florida State, on the other hand, this number is ring the alarm, throw up the red flags, sound the siren. This is bad. Florida State has been held under 100 yards rushing in 7 of its last 17 games dating back to 2023. Seven times. So you've been held to under 100 yards rushing more times in what, 17 games than Memphis did in 53 games? That's terrible. And it gets worse. Keep listening. They have only rushed for 100 yards one time versus FBS teams, because again, you got the North Alabama game where Jordan played some, but he didn't miss the whole game and they ended up running good in that game. But since Jordan Travis has been injured, they've only run for 100 yards, at least 100 yards, versus FBS teams one time in the last 6 games. The only game that they topped the 100-yard mark was against Louisville in the ACC Championship game. And do remember, in that game, 76 yards of that came on one carry by Lawrence Toafili as the Wildcat quarterback. So you basically had a running back as your quarterback. You gave yourself a numbers advantage. You basically had that dual threat quarterback back there as well. So if you discount that one play where you had a running back and quarterback, Florida State technically has not rushed for 100 yards against an FBS team since Jordan Travis got injured, because you haven't run for over 100 yards in 2024 yet either. And so really, when you look at it, when the offensive line issues began to emerge in 2023, because again, like without Jordan Travis, you didn't run for 100 against Florida, you didn't run for 100 against Louisville, you didn't run for 100 against Georgia, and then you haven't run at all this year. So they started to show up in 2023, and then 2024 has just fallen off an absolute cliff. I mean, you just look at this year alone, like Florida State has the lowest yards per carry average against every opponent that the teams that they've faced, with the exception of VMI, Virginia Military Institute, an FCS school versus Georgia Tech. North Alabama had a higher yards per carry average against Memphis than Florida State did. Duquesne, another FCS school, had more rushing yards against Boston College than Florida State did, and they lost 58 to nothing. Florida State's 2.2 yards per carry is the lowest in all of Power Four. It has been an abject failure trying to run the ball this week. Again, I don't know that Alex Atkins is going to just fix this like a flipping a light switch. It may get better, but this is embarrassingly bad. Now, here's the thing. What we talked about, Florida State's offensive line was a disaster before Alex Atkins even got here. Remember, 7 times in the last 17 games. In 2018, Florida State's offense was held under 100 yards on 6 times in 2018 and then 5 times in 2019. So he took over a train wreck, and he's been trying to fix it ever since. Started to get better, has now regressed. Because you haven't been able to cover it up with Jordan Travis. Because Jordan Travis, in those first 3 years, he aided them by running for 559 yards in 2020, 530 yards in 2021, 417 yards in 2022. But in 2023, Florida State's most successful season, he actually only put up 176 yards on the ground. And I know you're thinking, okay, well, he got hurt. He only had 9 less carries in 2023 than he did in 2022, but yet he went from 417 down to 176, and his yards per carry got cut in half from the previous year and was a career low at 2.4 yards per carry. Now, we know Jordan was banged up. He didn't run the ball a ton that year, but he ran it almost as much as he did in 2022, but his yards per carry went way down because that offensive line was struggling. And so in 2023 and 2024, it has absolutely just really started to backtrack. And I think what might be most disappointing with that was in 2023, Florida State had the most experienced offensive line in the entire country. And in 2024, it is the number 3 most experienced line in the entire country. So you have all these experienced guys, and yet your offensive line is still going backwards. And I do think there are some things you could say to that, right? Like, how come these guys have all these starts and none of them have been NFL type of guys? How come none of them have went into the draft? That's a whole nother conversation that we'll get into in just 1 second. But again, like I said, you will see, I am interested to see how Alex Atkins can you know, get this thing, see if there's any gain to be happened there, because he probably is your run game coordinator. He does, not the play caller, but he is your offensive line coach and your OC. So we'll see. But again, if this thing doesn't get any better, then we got to really kind of look at how, what we're doing here. So now to bring this back to the two comparison teams, because we saw how much you struggled compared to Georgia and Clemson and how, why they had success and you didn't. Let's take that same approach with the run game here. So to bring this full circle, let's look back at where Florida State, Georgia, and Clemson stand. Now, as previously mentioned, do keep in mind, Florida State had rushed for under 100 yards in 7 of the past 17 games, 8 if you count, if you take away the one Wildcat run in the ACC Championship. So the problem is, Florida State, when you look back to 2017, the start of the decline, right? The end of the Jimbo Fisher era, transitioning into Willie Taggart. Now, the offensive line has been bad before 2017, but that's where the wins on the field started to decline too, because you started losing the players that you had to cover that up. That's when you didn't have the elite quarterbacks and things like that. So looking at the start of the decline back to 2017, that's 8 seasons. Florida State, like we talked about, where it happens on occasion that you're going to get held under, but when it becomes a pattern, it's a problem. So let's go with, you get held twice under 200 yards. In seasons where you've been held under 100 yards more than twice, that's what we're going to look at. Florida State has been held under 100 yards more than 2 times in a season in 6 of the past 8 years. Again, remember, 6 times in 2018, 5 times in 2019, 3 times so far in 2024, and you've only played 3 games. And so looking at those games where in those seasons where Florida State was held under 100 yards, in those games from 2017 on, that 8-year period, in games where Florida State was held under 100 yards, their record in those games is 6-19. That is terrible. So you can see when you're allowing pressure on your quarterback and you can't run the ball, your record is abysmal, 6-19. And on top of that, half of those wins, 3 of them, came in 2023. Florida State beat Clemson in overtime. You also beat a kind of bad Miami team by 7 points at home with a freshman backup making his second start ever. That wasn't exactly a very good win there. But you won. You still won. And I know it's a rival game. I get all that. But you get what I'm saying here. And then you also beat Florida when your defense was dominant and you held them to just 232 total yards. So you were able to compensate, and that's another big thing that we're going to talk about, is being able to compensate for when you have a bad offensive line that can't run the ball. And so with either a pass game or a dominant defense. And so, again, like we said, without Jordan Travis in 2023 and without that dominant defense, which was the bowl game, the one game you played without both of those, you got blown out by 60 points. And now I understand there are a lot of extenuating factors that go into that Georgia game. I get all that. But even when you go back to 2017 now, without Jordan Travis or that dominant defense, you're 3-19 when running for less than triple digits since 2017. 3-19. So you see the importance of why you have to get to over 100 yards on the ground. And when you don't, you lose almost every time. But that's not exclusive to Florida State. And so here's the other thing, because we're going to look at Georgia now. This is where you want to get, and this also shows kind of where the struggles happen for them too. So to get to 7 games where we know Florida State is at in the last 17 games since 2023, just one season and 3 games, to get to that same number with Georgia being held under 100 yards, you have to go all the way back to 2018. Now, that includes 2024. So basically, you know, 6 1/4 seasons, 7 seasons for Georgia to get to that same number compared to 1 1/4 for Florida State. And in one of those games, they ran for 99 yards. So they were right there knocking on the door. Or else you'd have to go another year back to 2017. In those 7 games where Georgia has been held under 100 yards since 2018, they're 4-3. And they've only lost 8 games over that same period. So as you can see, the lack of success when you can't run the ball well, that goes for Georgia too. I mean, that's almost 50% of the games that they've lost in that span. The difference between the two, Georgia has been able to compensate better than Florida State with other areas, primarily their defense. And so, you know, Florida State, that's what they were able to do in 2023. They were able to compensate. Now they can't. They don't have a good enough defense or good enough skill players to overcome this offensive line trouble. So let's just look at Georgia real quick. So last season, they were held to 99 yards. That was the one game where they're at 99. They were held to 99 versus Ball State. That was a bad game for them. There was Kirby probably chewed that butt after that game, and that was a wake-up call for them. But their defense held Ball State to only 224 yards. So really, they could have ran the triple option and probably won that game. They won in a blowout fashion. I think it was 45-7. The only other game last year where Georgia was held to under 100 yards was Alabama. And guess what? That was also their only loss of the season. So again, you see what I'm getting at here. The two times they were held to under 100 yards in 2020, because during their two title years, 21 and 22, they were not held to under 100 yards a single time. They had triple digits in every single game. But in 2020, when they were held two times under 100 yards, they threw for over 400 yards in both of those games and barely won. They skated by with a win there. So again, you see how you either have to compensate with your defense or you have to compensate with the pass game. And, you know, even when you look back to 2019, we're not going to go through every single game, but this is what I mean. In 2019, they beat Texas A&M with less than 100 yards rushing, but they held Texas A&M to 274 yards. So they gave Texas A&M the Florida treatment like Florida State did in 2023. They just didn't let them score many points. That was a close win. I think it was like 16-13 or 19-13 or something like that. But here you can see when they didn't compensate, right? In 2019, they did not have 400 yards passing, and they did not have a dominant performance, and they were held under 100 yards. They lost to LSU by 27 points. When's the last time Georgia lost to somebody by 27 points? Well, it was 2019. So you can see, again, where when you can't compensate and you can't run the ball on the ground either, how critical that is to be able to do. Now, again, like when we talk about the being held under 100 yards more than two times in a season, because again, you're just going to play a really good team or something like that's going to happen or whatever. The last time Georgia was held to under 100 yards more than two times in a season was 2010, 14 years ago. Guess what 2010 was? The last time Georgia had a losing season at 6-7. The year before, they were held under 100 yards more than two times, and they went 8-5. Again, this is what we're talking about. The correlation of success is directly tied to the offensive line, and I hope you're kind of seeing that. So let's kind of close this out, and let's talk about Clemson real quick, our other comparison team. So the Tigers have already been held to under 100 yards one time in 2024, and that was against Georgia, which resulted in a 31-point blowout. We could stop right there. You can already see what happens there. But to get to seven games like Florida State has so far in the last 17, where Clemson's been held under 100 yards, you got to go back to 2020. So an additional three seasons. And the last time Clemson was held to under 100 yards rushing more than twice in one season was 2017. So again, way, way farther back. And in games where Clemson has been held under 100 yards since 2017, like we just talked about with Florida State and Georgia, they're 3-8. And so that, again, these things just keep adding up, the correlation and the causation. You see what I'm getting at here. And so Clemson, when you look at in their title years, because we just said that Georgia did not get held under 100 yards in either one of their title years, Clemson, when you look at when they won in 2016, they were held under 100 yards twice. One of those losses was the 1-point upset against Pitt, even though Clemson threw for 580 yards, but they only lost by 1 point at home. That was a bad game for them. They did compensate, but their defense allowed them to score, I think, 43 points. I think they lost like 43, 42. So the pass game was there, but the defense wasn't. It's almost like you have three facets here: pass, run, defense. You got to have two of the three. You can't not have any, like Florida State has right now, and you can't just have one of three. The other game in 2016 where they were held under 100 yards was in the title game against Alabama. They threw for 420 yards and won on the last play of the game. So they skated by with a good passing performance. So like I said, man, let's kind of bring this home here. what this tells us is that to be successful at the level we want to be at Florida State, which is where Georgia has been, which is where Clemson was, and they're slipping from, you need to either run in triple. This is the trifecta that I just talked about. You either need to run for triple digits in almost every game, or you need to be able to compensate with a dominant defense or to be able to air the ball out. The problem is Florida State has only thrown for over 400 yards two times since 2017, twice, only two times in 8 years. Whereas Clemson has done it nine times. Now, Georgia has only thrown the ball over 400 yards since 2017 five times, so only three more times than Florida State. So it ain't like they're running an air raid offense, but the difference is Georgia has had a top 10 scoring defense in six of those 8 years, so they don't even really need an offense, to be honest. They could just kick a field goal and probably win with that. But even the years they didn't finish top 10, it was 14th and 16th. Now, Clemson, during their heyday, during their run, they had a top five scoring defense in four of those 8 years before beginning their recent decline. And you've seen that kind of fall. Now, they've still been pretty decent at defense, like top 50, some years in the top 25. But you can see where they've declined as their defense and their offense has declined. The problem is Florida State has only had a top 20 scoring defense two times in the past 8 years. And so, like, you have not had enough of a dominant defense or legitimate passing game to compensate for when you can't run the ball. And so that's why Florida State, you really have to fix this offensive line issue at the core of the problem. And I get that we're talking about three different programs here. We're talking about teams that were competing for national championships and teams that were in rebuilds with bad coaching hires and things like that. But the point is, if you are able to get this offensive line sorted out and then you can get any semblance of a defense and passing game, Florida State can be successful. But really, while 2024 is everything is bad, the offensive line has been the core issue holding you back for the better part of a decade. And we see that in these numbers that we just covered. And so again, like I said, man, just to kind of wrap this up, where like there's so many issues that Florida State has in 2024, because you have not been able to cover these issues up with a Jordan Travis, with a Dalvin Cook, with these types of skill players. You just haven't been able to do it. Now you have a guy at quarterback in DJ who can't help that offensive line out and who isn't as dominant of a passer that you need to be able to open things up and air it out. And you know, that's really like, when you look at 2024, we were wrong about a lot of things, right? There's a lot of people. Nick Saban was wrong. NFL scouts were wrong. Every beat writer that covers Florida State was wrong about a lot of things. But one of the things that we said was that I don't think DJ is going to come in and be a Heisman-level quarterback like a Jameis or a Jordan or anything like that. But I think he can be good enough if you have the dominant offensive line that we were told we could expect this year. If we were thinking they were going to hit that 180-200 mark, not 60 yards a game. That can't happen. If you had the running backs, if you had receivers that could make separation and get open and all the speed, we talked about the wide receiver. If you had a top 20 defense, which we have not seen, if you had all those things around DJ, he would have been probably good enough. The problem is you don't. He was never going to win you a Heisman Trophy. That doesn't mean he was going to be this bad, but he can't make up for a lot of the things that are going on in 2024. You know, even if you put Jordan Travis behind this offensive line with these receivers, I don't know that you go 13-0 or 13-1. I don't know that you go 10-2. I don't know that you make an ACC championship because you got so many problems. You probably wouldn't be 0-3. I'll give you that much. Even with Brock Glenn, I don't know that you would be 0-3. I don't know that you'd be a whole lot better. But DJ is not good enough. And it's not a knock on him. That's who he is. He's not good enough. Like Michael talked about before, he's more of a game manager. You cannot put the game on his arm. You cannot let him throw the ball 40 times a game. You cannot let pressure be in his face the entire time. You know, you cannot drop 14% of his passes in you know, throughout the first three games. He shares in a lot of the blame, right? He owns a lot of these problems. But what you should take away from this is that there is a deeper rooted issue that has plagued this program for the better part of a decade that has nothing to do with DJU. It's just getting exposed on a high level this year. And until you fix that, you run the risk. Now, Brock, Luke, Trevor, the guys on your roster, Tramwell Jones coming in. These guys are more mobile than DJ. DJ is a stick in the mud. You know, the brace on his leg, all that type of stuff. I don't know if it's an injury issue. If he could run like he did at Clemson, I don't think we'd even be this bad. I really don't. Again, I'm not here to defend DJ because I know a lot of you are going to say in the comments that he is the biggest problem, but hopefully you've seen here that, like, if you don't fix this core issue, no matter who you put at quarterback, unless you have elite skill players year in and year out, it's going to be hard to sustain the success that you want to have. But again, like, if you had, you know, if you put, I mean, let's be real, guys, if you put DJ behind Georgia's offensive line, he's probably not looking this bad. And so I think that is kind of the takeaway here. Now, how do you fix it? You may have to look at making a change at the position. I mean, ultimately, the position coach is responsible for this. And like we talked about in the Tough Questions episode, I'm not saying that Alex Atkins can't fix this, because, again, there's been other coaches before him that couldn't fix it either. But at some point, you got to ask what you're doing at the position, because here's the thing. When we talked about this before, Florida State has signed 12 high school offensive linemen under Alex Atkins from 2020 to 2023. A lot of blue chip guys. So far, only one of them, Robert Scott, has started more than one game. And even then, he lost the starting job when he got injured because he got kind of recruited over from the portal because he's just not that great. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude to him as a person. He's a great guy, I'm sure. He's just not that great. And only two of his high school recruits so far have played more than 50 snaps in a season, and that's Jalen Early and Robert Scott. And I suspect that Jalen Early probably wouldn't have paid because he played his snaps this year. I don't know that he plays over 50 snaps this year if Washington and Byers are both healthy. So, like, again, you also have seven of those 12 recruits are no longer even on the roster. And so to me, it's kind of like when you look at this, this is such a longstanding issue that these high school recruits and the development of the players at the position, whether they're transfers, you know, a lot of the guys that come in are multi-year starters at other programs that are already developed. The recruiting at the position and the development at the position have to get better if you want to fix this. And whether Alex Atkinson can do that or not, that's to be determined. But I mean, again, you look at the numbers that what I'm talking about here, and it's just not good enough. But it hasn't been good enough for a long time. So this is an area that has to be fixed. And again, like, this is why I say that, and many of us say, Jordan Travis will probably go down as one of the best quarterbacks to ever wear garnet and gold because of what he covered up. The same thing with Dalvin Cook. I mean, you look at Jordan Travis. This offense in the last two seasons with Jordan Travis as starting quarterback has averaged 40.1 points per game. Since Jordan Travis has not been your quarterback, you're averaging 14.8 points per game. It's pitiful. And so he has covered up so much, just like Dalvin Cook covered up as a running back. I mean, imagine if he had ran behind that, even that 2022 offensive line. You know, imagine if he had run behind a Georgia or a Clemson offensive line. He probably would have won the Heisman. He should have won it anyway, to be honest. Probably would have won the Heisman and ran for 2,000 yards. I mean, the guy was just one of the best running backs in history anyway. But you get what I'm saying here is that the offensive line is the one constant problem for the last 10 years. It's just now you don't have anyone good enough to hide them. And that is why recruiting a dual threat quarterback is great. And it would very much help you hide the wound that is festering, that is Florida State's offensive line. But the ultimate fix to be a championship caliber team year in and year out, which is where we want to be, is to fix the trenches up front on the offensive line. Now, of course, the defensive line needs to be fixed too. That's a subject matter for another episode. We touched on that in the Tough Questions episode if you want to watch that too. But you got to fix this, man, or else it's like we talked about with Adam Fuller and the defense, right? If you need, because they've had a top 20 defense the past two seasons, if you need a defense that is full of NFL talent and they haven't played a lot of great offenses in 22 and 23, again, we cover that in that episode too. If you need a defense that is loaded with NFL talent to have a good defense, and you've got guys that can't recruit that level of players, then you need to start over. The same could be said with the offense here. Like, if you need such good skill players to cover up a terrible offensive line that's been going on for the better part of a decade, and you can't get them here, you got to make a change. You got to figure something out. But at the end of the day, why not just fix the problem? And I know that's easier said than done, but maybe that means a change at the position. Maybe that means focusing the primary amount of your NIL funds into the trenches on the offensive line coming out of the high school ranks. Because again, that's Clemson, that's Georgia, that's Alabama. They're not going and getting offensive linemen out of the portal. They're getting these guys from high school and they're developing them over years where they can plug and play and be successful year over year over year, which is again what we talked about, where Florida State is built the opposite. We're taking most of our offensive linemen out of the portal. And even the ones that we didn't take out of the portal aren't seeing the field. So we aren't recruiting good enough or developing good enough to where we can sustain that success. We are built backwards from a lot of the other programs that have been title contenders for the last few years. So that's what I'm getting at in this episode. I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up now, but I appreciate you guys watching. I know it's long. I know it's kind of dry talking about this stuff, but man, when I started doing this and I started looking at some of these things, I was like, wow, this is big stuff, man. This is like, I mean, we knew we've had an offensive line issue for a long time, but when you see the causation of the struggle and the correlation to success, it's eye opening and it's tough, man. That's a big part of why I think even as bad as DJU has looked, even as bad as the offense or the receivers are dropping passes, this offensive line is the core of your problems. That doesn't mean everybody else isn't a problem. It just means it all starts up front. And so that has to be fixed. So again, guys, if you want to read this, you want to follow along more closely, you want to see the numbers in front of your own eyes, go over to our website at plantthespear.com where you can read this episode or you can read this article for yourself there. And then also, again, like I said, make sure you check back in with us on Friday for that Friday episode where we will be previewing the Cal game. For what it's worth, we'll be talking about that ACC settlement. We'll be talking about, a lot of other things from the national college football picture because, you know, hey, getting kind of old talking about an 0-3 team. But, you know, of course, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about that and have some fun on that episode as well. So make sure you guys check back for that. Let me know what you thought of this episode in the comments below. Again, like I said, it's not the most exciting. It's not the most funny. I don't have Michael here to laugh at any jokes or anything like that. So I know this one's a little bit dry, but like I said, this feels like forensic science for football. And sometimes I really love digging in and doing this type of stuff. And I spent a long time on this. So I hope you got a lot of hours of research went into this. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Let me know what you think in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. We appreciate a like and subscribe. If you watch this long, rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other FSU fans. So we would greatly appreciate that as well. If you are listening on the audio only version. Make sure you also check out Alumni Hall FSU to go load up on some awesome FSU gear as we get ready to have another night game in Doak Campbell Stadium. So with that being said, guys, we're going to wrap it up here. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for watching and go Noles.